Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to have Dave McKay here with me. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing excellent. How are you?
That's great. That's great. Dave, you're a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center.
That's true.
In Murphy's, California, and today you're not in Murphy's.
No, I'm actually in the beautiful mountains of Western North Carolina.
Wow.
In the middle of a retreat that we're having here.
Wow, that's exciting. That's exciting. You know, when I first heard about the retreat, I went to the website for the location, and it looks really beautiful.
It's amazingly beautiful. We've actually never been to this spot before, and we're just so pleased. The facility is on a great big lake. The dogwoods are blooming all over the place. It's a little cold right now, but, you know, spring has sprung, and it's really quite fantastic.
That's exciting. That's really exciting. Dave, I thought we would use our time today to talk a little bit about what it's like to be on retreat.
Okay, super.
And I know that some of our listeners haven't been on retreat before, and so you can be our resident expert today.
Okay, all right. Well, what happens on retreat is we set up an environment for awareness practice, and we do that in a real specific way. We bring people together, and we create an environment where we don't have to do the things that we normally do in life. You know, we don't have to be a certain way. We don't have to, engage with the world in the way that we normally do. Instead, we can just kind of let go of everything that normally attracts our attention and just be here and just practice being aware. And so we don't talk to each other while we're on retreat. We avoid making eye contact. We don't read and write. We don't do lots of other things that people normally do to distract themselves in life. And
right.
Most people find, you know, after they get used to that, it's really pretty wonderful because there's nothing left to do to be with oneself in the silence and just enjoy who you are.
Yes, yes. And to me, a piece of that is really that someone else does that for me, that the environment is set up in such a way that if I can find the willingness to show up and be there, that environment really supports me in being here and now.
Yeah, it's really true. That's my experience too. It inevitably works, if that's kind of what you mean.
Yes.
Of course, that willingness is the big key of it. And
yes,
as you say, you know, there's someone who has set it up. In this case, it's the guide of this practice, who has vast experience in what leads towards suffering and what leads away from suffering. And it's set up to help us to really see what leads away from suffering. And if we have the willingness to not suffer, and that's a big step for us to take, to get that willingness, then, like you say, then things start happening. We start to discover who we are, and we start to find ourselves to be free in a way that, you know, a lot of times we didn't even realize was possible.
Yes, yes, yes. That's really exciting. There's so many interesting aspects in what you're talking about. I'm trying to decide which direction to go in. And for me, a piece of what you're pointing at is what I project onto other people who are also there on retreat. And
uh-huh.
And as in real life, I'm projecting onto people and situations all the time. And when I'm on retreat, I don't have a chance to talk about that really or believe that in the way I normally do out in the world.
Yeah, it's really true. Well, you know, always in life, you know, life is always a mirror for us and shows us kind of who we are and what's going on. But, you know, outside of retreat where there's so many distractions and so many things that seem real and believable, it's really kind of hard to see oneself in the mirror. But on retreat, of course, it's set up, like you're saying, in a way that we really get to recognize our projections. You know, my favorite is, you know, I can tell the guy next to me doesn't like me by the way I'm chewing.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, where we get to see kind of the stuff that we make up about who we are, about, you know, what people think about us, and see that truly it's all coming from us, and we get to see sort of how we do that.
Yes, it's very enlightening in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the kind of nuts and bolts, like the daily schedule, for example.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, we all follow the same schedule all day long. It's really a lot like being a monk.
Yeah.
It's very similar. We follow the same schedule all day. We wake up in the morning. We start the day with a sitting meditation period for half an hour, and then we have breakfast. And then, depending on the type of retreat it is, we do a variety of things. This retreat we're on right now here in North Carolina is a work retreat. We trade our work and what we can accomplish here for the use of the facility that we're using. And so a part of each day, a small part, is working meditation. We also have meals together. We have group discussions together. There's the opportunity to have individual guidance appointments with the teacher, which is not to be missed. And the whole thing happens in silence, like we were saying before. So, when there's nothing scheduled, you know, there's breaks during the day where we can, you know, take a walk or, you know, do whatever we feel like we need to do in order to take care of ourselves. Even during those times, we're practicing because the structure is still there. There's still the silence. There's still that reflection we were talking about that shows us who we are and enables us to really, you know, experience ourselves without all the distractions that are normally there.
Yes. And a piece of it for me in what you're talking about, the discussion that does happen is very structured. And for me, what's helpful going on retreat also is the sort of initial orientations. Like if I'm going on retreat for the first time, you know, there's a real opportunity to ask questions about mm-hmm. how things are done, how we do meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, there's that discussion in a way that's really structured and really aimed to support awareness.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, to me, one of the neatest things about that is that, you know, like you say, you come on retreat, you get to, there's a period of time where you find out sort of how to do that and what all the guidelines are, you know, kind of what the expectations are, how to participate. And then after that, what happens is you practice and you pay attention.
Yeah.
And instead of, you know, you come to group and instead of what doesn't happen is a lecture or some kind of, you know, here's some ideas to consider. What happens instead is people talk about their experience during the day of awareness practice.
Yeah.
And it's like you know, in this case, I think we have 36 of us here all together. We've got 36 scientists out there looking to see what is awareness and what, you know, how do we cause ourselves to suffer and how can we drop suffering and begin to move towards freedom. And so all these scientists come together and talk about what they've seen during the day. And then, of course, the guide sort of puts it together for us in a way that, you know, helps everyone understand it and also gives us more to practice the next day.
That's amazing. I'm just picturing all 36 of you sitting there in meditation or over lunch or in group discussion. It's really exciting.
Yeah, and it's really fun, too, you know, because people, I'm sure, as you know, Michael, you know, people are wonderful.
Yeah.
And beautiful and fun to be around, especially when they're practicing like crazy, letting go of conditioning.
Yes.
And to come together in this way and practice, and, you know, there's no conflict that happens. There's no unpleasantness. There's nothing but we've all come here together to find a way to have the best lives we can possibly have. And to do that as a group is pretty much as good as it gets.
Yes. It gives me goosebumps all over. Yeah, and when I'm on retreat, you know, the willingness and the courage that I project on other people is just amazing.
Yeah, it's inspiring, isn't it? Well, it keeps us all going. You know, it would be so hard to do this alone.
Yes.
But, you know, in Sangha, you know, in a community where we're all attempting to accomplish the same thing, you know, we inspire each other. We kind of encourage each other with what we've seen. We help each other just with our own awareness, you know, sharing that. It's kind of like having one mind that we're all sharing. We're all in these different bodies, but we've got this one mind, and together we're attempting to accomplish this thing, which is really big, you know, ending suffering, but also really fun and exciting, especially when we get to share it with people.
Yes. And I loved your metaphor of the scientists, and it seems to me what you're pointing at, and my experience with Sangha, is we're all looking at the same kind of thing. You know, we
mm-hmm.
think we're different in these various ways, and yet when we come together in awareness practice, it's revealed pretty quickly that it's not so.
Yeah, we're all exactly the same. And the way that we can become free of suffering is all the same too. That's why it's so beneficial to be around people, because we're all exploring the same process.
Yes.
And so, you know, as we come together, we can help each other with that.
Yes. Very exciting. Dave, thanks so much for being our resident expert about being on retreat.
You're quite welcome. Hey, Michael, can I throw in one little unrelated piece of good news that I heard about today?
Please.
We heard from the gang in Africa, you know, our Zambian folks in Africa, and found out for people who have been following the blog and following the work in Africa, our very good friend Josephine, who lives in Cantalamba, had a baby today, a baby girl.
Oh, great.
So that's for folks who know Josephine and know her story, it's a wonderful piece of news that we're really excited about.
Yes, yes, that's great. That's great. I remember reading in the blog, in fact, you wrote that she was just days away. So.
Yeah, we thought it might happen while we were there, but almost, just a few days later.
Uh-huh. Wonderful. Thanks for that, Dave.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Michael.
Oh, you're welcome. And I understand you have Sherry there also.
I do, and I'm going to pass over the phone.
Okay, great.
Michael.
Sherry.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Having a wonderful time.
Great.
Yes, as Dave reported, it's a good time in the mountains of North Carolina.
It sounds really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm imagining the trees and the forests and the sangha and the meditation room all filled with all 36 of you there.
Yes, and imagine a lake and dogwoods in bloom. And mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exciting.
And we are hoping to be invited back. so if that's the case, then we'll be here next year. And all the people out there listening who think that this sounds like a really good thing to do can join us.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to leave them some monastery chocolate cake as you go?
We did have some monastery chocolate cake. that's a good idea.
Great. Sherry, let me give out the phone number here. The phone lines are open here. We'd love to talk with you today. The number is toll-free in North America, 888-4-SANGHA, which is 888-472-6442. Again, that's 888-472-6442. Great. Sherry, I have an email question here.
Wonderful.
Great. Let me just get my notes organized here. Okay. Dear Sherry and Michael, though I have often been tempted to call on this issue, there is far too much shame around it, so I want no one to hear my voice or know my name. So thanks for the email opportunity. There are two issues for me, and I suspect they are related. The first is how I keep my house. I'm a clean person, and I constantly struggle to keep my house in order. It is a continuous battle for me. I love an orderly and clean house, yet no matter how hard I try, it never seems to stay that way. Sometimes I do succeed in getting it in order, only for it to fall apart in a weekend. I have much shame around this issue, as I think it reflects a lack of feminine ability, as I always think of the feminine being the one to keep the home. The second issue is I have so many uncompleted projects, two closets full. And now that I've taken up a new hobby, knitting and crocheting, the uncompleted projects are growing. Sometimes when I want to work on a project, I feel it is overwhelming. I know this has been an issue my whole life. Often, even when I was young, I would get very close to getting really good at something, good enough to make money from it, and then I would stop. Any insight you have on both these issues would be most appreciated. Thank you from a listener.
Well, I would guess that both of these have in common egocentric karmic conditioning and self-hatred.
Uh-huh.
So, first of all, now I think it is sexist to limit the great joys of housekeeping to one gender. Don't you think?
Yes. Yeah.
We don't want to keep anybody from the opportunity to participate.
Yeah.
And I don't know when, last year or the year before, whenever we came out with Making a Change for Good. And that 30-day retreat in the back of that book was created to address exactly these kinds of situations that everybody finds themselves in. You know, it makes me very sad that someone is trapped alone with conditioning and self-hatred in a way that there is this kind of shame around issues like this. You know,
yes.
From my perspective, these are just not shameful issues. But as we talk about all the time, conditioning will use against us whatever is upsetting to us. So,
yes.
You know, I watch with myself my house. Is an exact mirror all the time of what's going on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are times when I come in, oh, this last time was one, where I came back from a trip and I was home for 24 hours and it was literally long enough to throw everything out of the suitcase and put new stuff in the suitcase, you know, do some emails, answer some phone calls, that sort of thing, and leave again. So I just don't put an expectation on myself that my house will be meeting some kind of standard. So if I had a family and weekends were the time when everybody was there in the home together, I would just expect that the house was going to be a mess. As far as I can tell, the thing about a house is that it is always moving toward mess. Doesn't that seem to be the case?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like dusting, you know. You dust the house, and then you don't do anything, and pretty soon you have to dust again.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of participating in life. So it makes me very sad that self-hatred does that to somebody because it's, you know, Dave was talking earlier about people coming together, being on retreat, and talking about these things as a group, and what happens to us in doing that is that we realize how alike we all are. And in that sharing, conditioning, self-hatred loses some of its ability to grab us and keep us in bondage in that way. Anyway,
yeah.
Making a change for good. So I would separate these out because, you know, it's all a process. It's pretty much all the same process.
Yeah.
So it's, what am I believing about this issue, and how does what I'm believing and what I'm projecting, the aspects of my personality that are involved, all of those kinds of things, create this situation, and then the voices jump in and make it mean something, and then the opposite of that is created. So the house should look like this, but it doesn't. It looks like this. And the fact that it looks like this means this about me, and this is how I should feel about myself, and I really need to do something about it, but then I'm talked out of doing anything about it, and the fact that I'm talked out of doing anything about it is all the proof that we need that there really is something wrong with me. And I think we could fill a lot of content into that, into those steps.
Yeah.
So watching, taking on something like maintaining the house, and then begin to do a daily sort of process mapping on it. What are the voices saying? Who's there? What am I believing? How do I feel about it? When this happens, that happens. I do this, I'm told that, and then I give up and I feel overwhelmed and defeated and I feel ashamed, and then I'm told this. And we just chart it on a daily basis until we know all of the ins and outs of the whole thing. And what we are able to find out in doing that kind of awareness process is how the whole thing works. Because we are not held in a suffering place by accident or randomly. It's a very precise set of content that keeps something like that in place. And once this person figures out how it's all being held together, then there will be the freedom to make different choices at any step along the way.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Is that kind of your experience with how it works?
Yes, it is my experience as well, both with the house and with process generally.
Yeah,
in that I see the same process show up in whatever content I'm doing.
Whatever it is that we're struggling with or suffering over.
Yes.
So there's always that, here's the issue, and of course it's going to be a very personal issue. So it could be the house, it could be money, it could be weight, it could be job, it could be relationship, whatever it is. And so there's the issue, and this is what's wrong, and it's my fault.
Yeah.
And I should do something about it, but I don't, and I can't, and that proves that there's something wrong with me, and now I have to feel bad. So,
yeah,
it's pretty straightforward. It's just finding out what the individual pieces are in a particular piece of conditioning, and and then we go from there.
Yes, yes, and.
Once she gets it with the house, you know, she just applies all the same steps to the closet and the projects.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Great. And as usual, we will encourage her to write back in or call back in after she's looked at that.
Yeah. I hope she'll call in, you know, just because there's so much freedom in saying to those voices, you know, I'm not going to let you be the authority in my life. I'm gonna get some other opinions about
me.
Yeah.
Great, Sherry. We have some callers.
Good.
Okay, our first caller on tonight's show. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael. This is Sue calling from San Jose.
Hi.
Hey. Hi. And
what's
hi, Sherry.
What's going on? Huh?
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I'm calling because I've just been going through an interesting time of listening to voices in my head, and it's good to talk about it. And it goes, the content is around purchasing a car. So I am needing to buy a car right now, and I'm in the process of buying one. And the last time I did this was 12 years ago, which was before any before I knew you in the whole practice. So the last time I did this was a completely miserable time because a voice, and I realized in hindsight it was all because of voices, I was doing the wrong thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was buying the wrong car, blah, blah, you know, whatever it happens to be, it's the wrong price, you know.
You're spending too much money.
Yeah, you're not buying the most practical thing.
Yep.
But, you know, it just goes on and on. And it's kind of interesting because it's not nearly as bad as when I did this 12 years ago, which was absolutely miserable. But I hear those same voices coming back in. So it's just kind of interesting to talk about it. And with it comes along, you know, I talk with the person who I need to get my money from. And then it's like, do you know the person who you're buying it from? Well, no, I'm buying a used car. No, I don't know. But then, you know, it's like, well, do you know that they're not going to run off with your money? It's like, you know, it just goes on and on. And then it's like, did I pay the right price? Did I buy the right car? And it's just interesting, the obsession that goes along with the thought obsession that goes along with it. And it kept me up at night.
Now, those questions about running off with your money, that was an external person?
Yes, that was an external person.
Wow. So it feels ganged up upon, doesn't it?
Are there things that it's like, you know, what's actually kind of interesting is what I've realized with this is there's, you know, I've had a couple things, you know, like a couple external people that are giving advices of how I should do it. And so, you know, they're valid concerns, but it's also at one point, like to my brother, I finally said, you know what? I don't want to hear it. Like, I just, because it's like, I know it's just going to rattle off in my head and just keep going, which actually I felt like was pretty good of me of, I'm not going there, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because the voice, because by having that conversation with an external person, I know, because I didn't do what he said I should have done. Even though I talked with someone else and we kind of decided to go this other direction of how, you know, how to go about the task.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you ever just sit down with the voices and say, okay, you tell me what to do? Because I keep making decisions, and then I get information from you that you don't think that's the way to go. So what should I do?
Well, it's interesting because the word that comes up to me is, are you being practical? You know, that's always the strong word that comes through for me of, you know, it's like, well, you need to be more practical in how you do it. And then it's like, well, I think I'm actually doing it pretty practically. Is it the most practical? You know, I don't know, but it's thinking practically too.
Yeah.
And,
in some
ways, I'm actually kind of happy to say it's not nearly as bad as when I went through this last time. I mean, it's tons better. But it's, like, in some ways, it's a good thing. You know, it's like I can see it clearly.
Yes.
What's happening. And I'm not letting, and even this story of, like, you know, a year ago I had voices that were pretty strong about a different topic. And just, it's kind of helpful with the car situation to realize, okay, here we go again. Like, I've been through this before.
Like, we can gather, we can assemble the team, right?
Yeah.
For any life decision or any piece of content in life, the team will assemble and begin to share their opinions.
Yeah.
Here's my encouragement, though. Whatever you decide to do, finally, get everybody to sign off on it.
Well, the hard part, I mean, I guess my hesitation with that is there's a part of me that I don't think will ever sign off on it.
Uh-huh. And so that would be a good discussion to have. So in other words, so now you be that part, okay? I'll be you. And so I say, well, now, what do you think about this? Well, blah, blah, blah. Okay, should I do this? Blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, how about if I do it? Okay, so let's get this straight here. Nothing is going to make you happy. Is that right?
Well, and what's interesting is some of the things that kind of rattle off in my head of the voices I've looked into, and I have found solutions for those problems, you know, like that issue. Like, I have, you know, it's like, okay, I found a solution for it. But then the voice comes back, well, what if you don't like the solution for it? You know, it's like.
Yes. And so that's, you know, when we move into, all right, we're going to write under your name, will never be happy with anything.
Yeah. It's hard, I can tell. And
yeah.
It's interesting because, like, on the internet, it's so easy to start obsessing about looking things up on the internet. It's a, I mean, the computer is really kind of dangerous in that respect because you can obsessively research something, you know.
It's like all those internal voices are out there. So the amount
well, there's somewhere
of,
to keep looking for the information. To keep looking for information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what do you get to eventually? Just at some point, you have to make a decision. You do
well,
what you
I
do.
Have made a decision. And so now it's kind of the, you know, I've made a decision. But I have this part of me that's like, oh, but you're making the wrong one. You know, that. Even though I've kind of thought through all the issues, and you know what? They're just the issues that go along with this, you know, that vehicle.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And so at a certain point, then you're just going to need to decide not to entertain any more voices.
And I think that that's where I've gotten in. That's one thing that I feel proud about, because before they just, you know, like when I talk about, you know, like in previous times, even they're compelling, you know, they're very compelling stories. They're very practical voices. They're very common mainstream voice, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like your brother.
Yeah. You know, all of that.
And so to simply be able to say, this is what I'm doing. End of discussion. The time for discussion is over. The decision has been made. What happens will happen. I don't want to hear it. Yeah.
And it's also interesting because even that sort of same thing of like, okay, I've made a decision, stop the conversation. And there's some other stuff that's happened, like how I'm dealing with things that have nothing to do with the car, but like there's some family dynamics that have a lot of opinions that can go along with them right now. You know, what's happening in my, you know, like other family members are having their own little lifetime dramas. And it's easy to have opinions about them, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And it's very interesting because it's like, and then a couple of things I've decided, okay, I'm not going to share this with other, you know, my friends, my blah, blah, blah. But even though I feel like a good friend shares that, you know, that,
yes.
And I've said, I've made a decision. Now
and that's
stop
that.
The conversation.
Yeah. And that's
but it's
that.
Hard for me to say, and that's that. Like, there's a
yeah.
part of me that doesn't want to say, and that's that.
Yes, and we know who that is, don't we?
Conditioning.
Yeah. Who would carry this conversation on forever. For any amount of dissatisfaction or suffering or misery that might still be milked out of it.
And then what's interesting is, okay, the car scenario will stop, but it'll just shift into something else. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the
yep.
conversation may stop about the car, but then it will drift into...
Yep.
It will drift. I mean, that's really...
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like it's a big deal for me to, you know, just be like, I'm not going to entertain that. You know,
yeah.
or I'm not having this conversation.
I'm not having this conversation. I am turning my attention away from that conversation and back to here where I'm actually living.
Yeah.
It's a hard habit to break.
It's a hard habit to break, but it's amazing when you can actually look back to a different time.
Yes.
And the last time I did this was way, you know, it was years before I met you, so there was even a lot more suffering that happened after that.
Yes, yes. And it is heartening to see ourselves in similar circumstances and be able to just realize that we're different, that practice has in fact made a difference in our lives.
Yes.
So
definitely.
Just stop and give yourself a little congratulations there.
And I feel like, you know, and I feel like I, you know, I'm like, it is different. I know that it's different, and it's one thing to come, you know, to call in to say it is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, that whole thing of stop having the conversation
yeah.
in my head.
Yeah, it's freedom.
Even though there's a part that keeps pulling, but.
That's right, but.
Because the practical
no,
person thinks
no.
about these things.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe a little party tonight.
Yeah.
A little celebration.
So, thank
All
you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Congratulations
Bye.
And good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sue. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Hello. My name is John March, and I'm the leader of a music project called the Zen Blues Quartet. For the last few years, this collaboration of some of the best musicians in the world has been gathering to record and perform as a way of showing our gratitude and love for the music of the blues. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life!
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
Yay, next caller, you're on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Rebecca from Texas.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm doing all right.
All right, well, what's going on?
Well, it's kind of garden variety self-hate that I just want to take a look at with you and put it out there, okay?
All right.
Lately, I've kind of undertaken this new endeavor around offering workshops on spiritual practice. And some really old, familiar self-hate has been kicking in around, it says things like, nobody really gets you, you're weird, this isn't really going to work, just get in the real world, those kinds of things. And I guess what I'm really having to face is that there's a part of me that just falls for that and believes it and gets terribly wounded by that every time.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow, indeed.
It's amazing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And the part that's amazing is gets terribly wounded.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Why is that amazing? It feels very normal to me.
Because it's not happening to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, if so I'm your sister-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've just never liked you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've made it pretty clear that I don't like you. And, in fact, abundantly clear that I don't like you. And every time we're together, I find out, I find a way to communicate that to you really clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll think of something mean to say. I'll criticize something about the way you look or what you're wearing or what you're doing. Okay? Every time we get together, I do this. And I always can come up with something a little different. So, you know, this time it's your hair and the last time it was, you know, what you're wearing to work, and the time before that it's how you're raising your kids, and the time before that it's, but it's always something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long are you going to let me affect you? I mean, we've already established I don't like you.
Yeah, yeah. And as long as I'm in a relationship, well, you know, it's as long as I'm in a relationship with you, or as long as I'm willing to let you affect me.
Yeah, yeah. And as long as you are willing to let a part of you who is vulnerable be around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you had a child, you know, young child, and the way that I get to you is by being mean to the child.
Mm-hmm.
How many times would that go on before you said, you're not getting anywhere near that child?
Yeah, it would go on once. You know, that's all that would happen.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yet, for ourselves, we just seem to have endless,
Tolerance. Tolerance.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the abuse, anyway.
For the abuse. Yeah, we just, you know, because it's not an adult part of you.
Yeah.
Right? Who takes that in? Because an adult part of you would know, well, you know, that's a mean, vicious, ugly thing to say, and it's true anyway. So.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the thing, too, is that many times, of course, I am the adult, and it doesn't come in, but I guess what I'm seeing is that in this time in my life where I'm really trying something new and I've left this old job and I'm, you know, I guess there's this
vulnerability.
Yes. Yeah.
Vulnerability. And again, what an irony, because one would think that our response to times like that would be, okay, now this is a really difficult, stressful time in my life. It's new, and so I need to be really careful with myself. I need to be especially good and kind to myself because this is a troubling time.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't. In fact,
no.
Those are the times when we are most likely to abandon ourselves.
Yeah, because it's just such a cruel system,
This
whole conditioning thing.
Yeah, so there you are. You're going through this time. You're vulnerable. Your defenses are down. And so jump on her.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. God, yeah, that's very cruel, isn't it?
It's very cruel. It's very cruel, yes. Yes.
And sometimes I can engage, not, you know, this is what I think I want to stir up, or is that engage that angry parent in me that's like, no, you're not doing this to this child. No, that's
yes.
enough, you know, to engage that on behalf of this child, this vulnerable child. And
yes.
I don't know why that's not more readily available to me. You know,
I think one of the reasons that it's not more readily available is because conditioning tends to keep us in isolation. So as soon as you pick up the phone, what? Do you hear that sound?
No.
Okay. It must just be me then.
Sounds
like somebody is tap dancing on my eardrum.
Ouch.
Yeah. I'd put it on the other ear, but that doesn't seem to be
me. Now both ears hurt, right?
So as soon as you pick up the phone, you call in, you say, this is what's going on. All right, now then the person who was able to make that movement is disidentified enough from the whole thing to go, well, wait a minute now. I need that mama bear. That's what's called for in this situation. But until we've developed enough kind of, awareness
support?
Levels. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The support and the ability to remember, oh, I need support. The conditioning is working hard to keep you away from any support.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's really going after you because who's going to support you? You're weird. Nobody gets you. Yeah. And
Go ahead. Oh, okay. I was going to say, even as I was picking up the phone to call in, I could hear the voices saying, you know, you don't even have a job. How are you going to pay for this phone call? You got to save these minutes. You got, you know, all of that. And so, Now, what were you going to say?
Well, and then you do get the support, and it becomes clear to you immediately what you need to do to take care of yourself.
Yeah, that's right, because this whole mama bear image of you know, it emerged in this conversation, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great.
Now, here's where it all ties together, because I project this is what you want to offer other people.
Mm-hmm.
You want to help people feel supported. Have somewhere to turn. Have somebody that they can talk to and work through these things and get to places of clarity that help extract them from these relationships with conditioning that are ruining their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I can promise you people get that. There's a need.
Wow, that feels very important to hear.
I'll give you a second in a minute, but the second part of that is that in offering that to others, it keeps you focused on it all the time, which is the main reason conditioning wants to discourage you from doing it.
Yeah. Oh, that is... I was going to say, you know... When that, first of all, that as you're saying that there is a need, that people get that it's a need. First of all, it went in. I could just feel this emotion arising, so I know that went in really deeply. And the second thing is, back when we were talking about the tolerance and how long we won't tolerate for others, but we will for ourselves.
Uh-huh.
There was this little part of me that was so excited and it was saying, that's why I want to do this. That's why I want to do this, because I'm never so alive and compassionate as when I'm I'm talking about this and offering it to others.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
It's the truth.
Yes, it is. And just then trusting that something will emerge, you know, just taking one step at a time and keeping as big, you know, because it's just this void right now. Not a void, that's not right, but it's just a bunch of fluid things that aren't really congealed into anything yet.
Yes, yes, yes. And yet, already having a good impact on your own life and practice.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah.
Already.
Tuning you up.
Yep. Well, that's a beautiful perspective. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's right.
Good. I'm glad you called.
Thank you. Me too.
I think it was worth the money.
Worth the minutes. You have a good evening.
Take care of yourself.
I will. You too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rebecca. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's such a privilege to do this show.
It is, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Yeah. It's a lucky life we live.
Yes, yes. Sherry, let me give that phone number out again. We have one caller waiting, and I want to give the number out also. 888-4-SANGHA. That's 888-472-6442. We encourage you to give us a call today. Again, that's 888-472-6442. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, you ready for the next caller?
I am.
Okay, next caller, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Michael from Menlo Park.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. I think I must have been destined to talk to you tonight, Sherry, because when the show started, I wasn't planning on calling in, and when Michael said there's nobody on the line, that always astounds me, so I just took that as an invitation to call.
Good.
As a matter of fact, I think I really must be intended to talk to you tonight because I called on the house phone and then it died on me. And so I called back on my cell phone and it was about to die. So I don't know what all that means. Sherry, I want to ask you about something that I don't know whether it's self-hate trying to hook me or it's a subpersonality trying to understand something about our practice or what, but it's been on my mind for a long time. So I thought, well, I'll just ask and see what you say.
Right.
Okay. Now what it relates to is back on the creating your own universe email class. One day on February 6th, you sent out the clearest statement that I've ever seen, I think, of subpersonalities, egocentric karmic conditioning, and self-hatred. And what got me is I have thought several times in the last 7 years since I took up this practice that I had all this straight in my mind, but then but once again I got confused, and so if I take confusion as conditioned mind, then I should drop the whole thing. But there's some little voice that wants me to ask about it. And I think the point that the confusion comes up, and whoever's confused, I don't know, is having to do with the subpersonalities.
Uh-huh.
Because on more than one occasion, I think that the words I use, or the words I hear you use, or other people use, that subpersonalities are really, they are conditioned, but it seems to be the case that they are conditioning that want something, and that when we accept subpersonalities and love them, that somehow or another, that's some kind of karma that we are freeing. And that mm-hmm. that may just be, may totally be crazy. I don't know.
No, I think that's a fair description.
Okay.
So you have a fear. Let's say you have a fear of standing up in front of a group of people and talking.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of it's had a big influence on your life, because you've not done taken certain jobs, you've not joined certain things that you're interested in, anything that would put you in that position you have avoided. And
uh-huh.
finally you decide that you want to look into this, and so you're exploring that part of yourself, and what is that? And let's make it short here. It's this little guy who was traumatized in sixth grade because he stood up to do a report on something and whatever happened, and he was completely humiliated and became afraid of people and afraid of that. And he's been just kind of lost there ever since, and avoided. And the stories grow up about what it means and why you're like that, and self-hate gets a hold of it and calls you names and tells you what a wimp you are and how useless and how you ought to get over it. And, you know, can you relate to all of this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so you realize who this is. In fact, you very often what happens to us is we go right back. And for whatever period of time, become that little person and feel all of those feelings and how awful it was. But at the same time, because you're doing awareness practice, you're aware of all of that happening. And so instead of being that conditioned survival reaction that says, you know, he's a wimp and a loser and I hate him and I never want anything to do with him again, compassionate awareness is there. It just feels such love for this child, and
uh-huh.
and a desire to make it up to him and help him understand what happened to him, and that there's nothing wrong with him and it wasn't his fault, and help him to be freed of that so that he can grow up and do whatever he wants. Okay, so there's a personality and a subpersonality, and when you find him, he wants to be saved. He
uh-huh.
he wants to be mentored and embraced and comforted and brought into the fold. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now, is it the case that when we use the term egocentric karmic conditioning, that we're That particular phrase, that we're pointing to something that cannot be accepted, that wants to stay separate, that wants to suck our life energy in a way?
Yes. And so if we take the next stage of that, so there's that little
uh-huh.
boy, and
uh-huh.
and he's traumatized and horrified and pretty stuck there. But
yeah.
If that were the end of it, then he'd die. But instead, somebody survives that. And very
uh-huh.
often, the somebody who survives a situation like that does despise the one that was just survived.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to be like him. I don't want to be around him. He's an embarrassment. He has nothing to do with me. I don't talk in front of groups because I don't want to. I could if I wanted to, but I don't want to. Okay,
uh-huh.
And so just goes off in another direction. Now, very often, and so that can simply be another personality who just
yeah.
yeah, who just survived that and also needs help and love and support. But what happens is that these kinds of life circumstances get used by egocentric karmic conditioning to for its own survival. So that hatred and embarrassment that is a result of that situation that little boy went through gets used as fodder for the survival system of egocentric karmic conditioning, and stories begin to build up around it, and what happened, and what education is, and what teachers are, and what children are, and so this whole, you know, stories. We all know the kinds of stories that have been built up around things that happened to us. And once that kind of story gets a life going and gets voices attached to it, it becomes about it. It's no longer doesn't care about the little boy or the survival or any of that sort of thing. It's its own story that takes it and puts it at the center of the universe. So everyone and everything has to relate to it. And so it with that little boy, so then, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years go by, and that little boy is still stuck basically in that same level of fear and trauma. And all of this other story that's been built up around that, again, has no interest in him whatsoever. It doesn't take care of him. It's not protecting him. It's not anything. It's just using what happened to him as justification for the story that it has created around the circumstance. Then we throw in the next fun element, which is that self-hate uses that whole thing as information that says, this is what's wrong, and it's your fault, and this is how you are, and this is what you did, and this is why, and this is, and we know where that goes.
Yeah, that whole system is just a giant mess.
It is.
I mean, the egocentric karmic conditioning and the self-hate and wow.
Yeah, and most conditioned people believe, you know, when you get down to talking about it, that whole thing is there to protect that child. But it's not there to protect the child. In fact, it's the thing that keeps the child in a state of suffering, which is why when we're doing the kind of work that takes us back into that situation, into an awareness of that child from a place of compassion, there's just tremendous relief. There are often tears that go with it. It feels like a reclaiming, you know, it's like a reunion. Suddenly you have a part of you back that's been missing for all of these years. And it's not a, you know, it's not a happy moment for either egocentricity, egocentric karmic conditioning, or self-hatred. They're not rooting for that kind of happy homecoming.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm sure glad I called in and asked you about it. Like I say, I'm almost becoming to the point where when something just keeps coming up again and again, it may be that small voice who wants to know something, or
yeah,
it could be the, you know, this self hate's trying to do a number on me, but I don't know.
That's
and,
right, and that's that's the beauty of awareness practice. You know, something arises and we have the opportunity to bring it up and talk about it and see what's there, and then from that to see what the next steps are. And, you know, when we're looking, it's very difficult for I would say forever, actually, to know exactly what's what.
Yes.
Which is why the bottom line is compassion. So
yeah.
I don't have to be certain that it's an aspect of the personality who really is traumatized and really deserves love and acceptance rather than egocentric karmic. You know, if I can just find compassion for the human being and all that the human being is experiencing, it's going to sort itself out.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much. I mean,
thanks for
Being able to call in and talk. I mean, it seems like this whole practice is we need each other, and we have to we get stuck. We get caught in these loops, and we have to talk to somebody.
Yep, it seems to be the case. So, and personally, I'm glad for it.
Yeah, I am.
I like Sangha.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
Yeah. All right.
So,
thanks, Michael.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Michael. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I just love Sangha.
Just love it.
I do. I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great.
Did you get another Sangha to call in?
We do not have another Sangha to call in.
They're all right next door.
I know. They're all on retreat with you.
Get them and put them on the phone.
Yeah, you know, you could consider relaxing that no phone call rule.
Everybody has a cell phone. They
could go off in the woods and use it. No, I didn't suggest that.
No.
Sherry, I have an email question here.
All right.
Hi, I live in London. I'm on my own and have no one to share my awareness practice with. It's a daily struggle that I feel I am losing. I read the books. They make so much sense at the time, but then I struggle with the application. The archives are a big support to me, as due to time difference, I am in bed at this time. I'm currently trying to register for the Reflective Listening Buddies. Can I get on an email course also? I have an email question. I'm struggling with my sitting practice, as I have always had sloped shoulders and bad posture, and I'm not really flexible around the hips either. I also have a fat stomach, which self-hate constantly beats me up over. So in summary, when I sit, I find it physically and mentally so uncomfortable that I don't do it anywhere near enough, and I let conditioned mind stop me from sitting. In Sherry's book, How to Get From Where You Are, it says it's okay to sit in a chair with an upright back. My question is this: is sitting in a chair as good or as effective in terms of awareness practice? Or should I persevere with sitting on a cushion? Thank you from a listener.
Oh, dear. You know, we just always have to escalate it. You know, the question of is it as good? Well, you know, it doesn't matter if it's as good or not as good. Or the point is, what's going to work?
Yes.
And so here's this person facing what everybody faces, which is conditioning, trying to stop awareness practice. And what we do is the best that we can do. So if sitting in the chair, it will circumvent enough of the voices that it can happen, then that's a very good thing.
Yes.
And of course, while that's going on, it's a good opportunity for a person to work on strengthening the muscles in the back so that the posture is improved. That's a good thing, whether you're sitting or not. It's just a good thing to take care of the body. So to take care of the flexibility, not just in the hips, but everywhere. So, you know, start a yoga practice, because that helps the body. And helping the body helps the sitting, and helping the body, helping the sitting helps awareness. And so, sure, you sit in a chair. Now, might you want to at some point sit in full lotus, the way, you know, the Buddha is depicted as sitting? Well, sure, wouldn't we all like to do that? And it can be a lifetime process of practice.
Yeah.
And if it's done from a place of loving kindness and a desire to share an experience together, then it is going to be a fun and lovely thing. So I think about Martin, your older son.
Yes.
And at some point, he's going to do something, or you're going to want him to do something. You know, maybe play the piano. Maybe we have that piano downstairs at the Zen Center, so, you know, at some point he might decide he wants to play the piano. Now, that could turn into one of those hideous contests that parents sometimes make for their children.
Yeah.
Where you have to do this, you have to do it in this way, at this time, for this long, until it is just so miserable that yeah. any love for playing the piano is just destroyed. Or it could be an opportunity to do something together. So maybe both of you learn to play the piano at the same time. And you practice together, and you talk about what it's like and how sometimes you really want to and sometimes you don't really want to, and it's not that much fun, and what are the benefits of going ahead and doing something when you don't really want to, and you celebrate the successes and you support one another through the hard times, and it's a great thing to do together.
Yeah.
And sitting can be exactly like that. So we say to this person, you know, you're suffering. I see that you're suffering. I really don't want you to suffer. I will do anything to help you. Anything.
Wow. Yeah, to me, what you're pointing at is that unconditional willingness.
Absolutely.
That just is so transformative in my experience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, if we look at Martin, then it's so obvious. You know, he's little and so cute, and who wouldn't want to be kind to him, and who wouldn't want to get up in the middle of the night with him when he's not feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we do these things whether we actually want to or not because of love.
Yeah.
And as we develop that relationship with this human being that we call ourselves, that we know so intimately, as transformation. That's the thing that happens. And what used to be difficult isn't. It's now fun because it's love.
Yes. Yes.
So yes, I want that person to sit in a chair, and then to come up with every possible way of taking the best care of that human being that can possibly be taken. And where that body will go will just be astounding.
Mm. Mm.
Because we all thrive in love.
Yes. Yes, we all thrive in love. That's my experience. And I can't think of a better send-off for this show, Sherry.
Me too.
Well
Thanks,
done.
Michael.
Well done.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Much love.
Much love.
Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.